Today I'll be speaking to Evie Brandish, who was diagnosed with follicular thyroid cancer at just 19, and Lee Jarvis, one of our deputy centre managers.
So my name is Lee Jarvis, and I am a deputy centre manager at Big C in our Kingsland support centre, and through that I run our teenage and young adult support group, as well as a load of other support groups and help individuals who are affected by cancer in Norfolk.
So hi, my name's Evie. I'm currently a uni student studying psychology. I'm in my first year, and I am 19 years old, going on 20 this year. And I was diagnosed with follicular thyroid cancer.
And could you explain a bit more what that diagnosis means?
So my diagnosis, as I said, was follicular thyroid cancer, which is a cancer inside the thyroid, and the main symptom usually of it is getting a lump on the side of your neck, around your where your thyroid is. So that was my symptom, my main symptom that I had. But it can also have, you can also have symptoms where the thyroid doesn't function as well, so it has a lot of functions, such as like regulating your emotions and menstrual cycle as well, and that can also have symptoms. I don't know loads about it because I tried to investigate a little bit, but I don't want to go too much in depth to it because I'm not very scientific in that sense.
No, and there's always that worry if you look into something too much, you then start thinking, oh my God, I've got every side effect there is, and you know, you start finding side effects you didn't know you had. And
yeah, exactly that. Yeah, so yeah.
And when is it that you was first diagnosed again?
So I was diagnosed the beginning of January this year, so it hasn't actually been that long that I've had the diagnosis, but it's been sort of going on since October last year where I found the lump, and it's been a long sort of process of two operations and some extra treatment. But the first operation was what detected the cancer. So yeah, it's not been very long that I've known it, but it feels like a very long time.
Did you have any sort of concerns about it might have been cancerous in the first place, or was you just completely sort of like confused by it?
I think there's a sort of everyone thinks that when you have a lump on your body it's going to be cancerous. Like, that was my first initial thought, because I've sort of been taught that if you have a lump, go to the doctors, could be cancerous. But obviously I didn't really want to go down that route, because I didn't have answers, so I knew it would sort of, I'd overthink it a lot if I was telling myself it's cancerous. But yeah, it was a worry, and I think because it was such a long process of not having the right results and having to have an operation, it sort of felt like the diagnosis would be cancerous. So it was a shock in a way when I found it out, but also I was sort of prepared for it because from the start I'd been aware that it could be cancerous because it was a lump, basically.
Yeah. And what was your initial thoughts after, like the doctors had told you that it was cancer?
So obviously it was quite a weird situation, because I'd gone in to have my consultation after they'd analysed the lump, I was sort of having a joke with the surgeon, and we were joking about, I can't remember what, something that happened at Christmas, and then he suddenly went, so they've analysed it and they found out it was cancerous. So it felt really weird because we went from being really positive to suddenly quite serious, and obviously because of COVID I couldn't have my parents or my loved ones with me when I was getting the news, so it wasn't what I expected it would be like, but my initial thoughts were, I guess I was scared, but also the way that my surgeon had sort of painted the diagnosis was sort of very positive. He literally said there's so many positives about this diagnosis that you need to focus on those and not try and think of the negatives. So I think because he was positive, it made me feel a little bit more positive about it. But also, you know, I I was aware that if it was cancerous, I'd probably need another operation. I'd probably need some radioactive treatment as well. So also that was a bit overwhelming because I knew I'd have to go through the operation again. And I was quite nervous about that as well. So, yeah.
So you said you were on your own when you got told the news and you didn't have your family with you. So most people would have someone with them and then they'd almost be able to help with the telling other people. So then you actually found out on your own, but then you had to go and tell your family what was going on. So how was that and how did they react?
I mean, it was really a strange situation because I was staying with my boyfriend at the time thinking we'd spend lockdown together. So I called him when I first got out and told him the news. But I knew that I'd be seeing him later so I could talk more in depth about it. But obviously because we were in lockdown, I couldn't see my family that I wasn't living with. So I couldn't, I couldn't hug them. I couldn't sort of get their support in person. So it was a really weird place to be really. When I told my mum, I told her literally from the front door, and it's such a weird thing to say, you know, from a front door, oh, it's cancerous, you know, it was really strange, and it was quite isolating in a way, because I could only, you know, I had the support of my boyfriend, but it was hard to sort of have all the support that I'd usually have if I could be around other people as well. I think like me, my family was sort of prepared for it in a way because I'd spoken about that being a possibility. And because I tried to be positive about it, I think that made them more positive about it. But again, because I couldn't get their sort of initial reactions or have a long conversation with them about it, it was hard to sort of gauge what they were thinking, I suppose. So yeah, as I said, it's very, very alien situation to have been in.
So you were staying positive for them as well as yourself then, you were...
Yeah, I was just pointing out all the positives really, and I think that did help me and that helped them as well, which was good. So that's what I focused on really.
Was it that sort of reaction where like... You mentioned that you said it from the front door sort of thing. Was it that sort of reaction where like your mum or your dad or whoever wanted to kind of like just give you a hug at that moment and just...
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, I can, you know, close contact, just a hug or, you know, just that human touch is what you need in that situation. And to not be able to have that, you know, and not... I couldn't do it and not worry about COVID and stuff. It was really hard to accept that. And I mean, I think in a way it was easier because I didn't have to, I didn't have to talk about it loads to my parents. You know, I didn't have to have a good deep conversation because I wasn't with them at the time. So I didn't have to face it as much, which was nice in a way. But also it would have been nice to have that physical sort of support and presence from them.
Have you been able to see them since sort of thing, like in the gardens and stuff?
So what happened was my boyfriend was going back to work and I found out that I'd need another operation and I'd need to isolate to have that operation, but it was literally the week he was going back to work, so I decided it would be best to come back to my parents and be able to have them support me because they weren't working and I could isolate here and be safe and stuff. So that was only really, it was only 2 weeks later that I could come to my parents and see them, which was nice. But then it was weird because when I was having my second operation, I couldn't have the support of my boyfriend because I wasn't with him at the time. So it was really weird sort of having a little bit of time and support from my boyfriend, but then and not having the support from my family and then having all the support from my family and not a lot from my boyfriend. So it was really weird.
So COVID made you choose between who you were going to be with, and that's a
I had to choose who I was going to be with, and I made the right decision, because when you've had an operation, all you need is that sort of care, and like you need that that sort of motherly support, I suppose. So it was the right thing for me, but it was difficult to sort of decide that.
And how do you feel like him and even your friends as well? What would you say their reaction was at first?
Well, in terms of my boyfriend, his family has been affected by cancer quite a lot. So I'd say he's quite sensitised to it in a way, and is usually... it's usually been sort of worse news for his family, so it's been sort of terminal cancer or a lot of chemotherapy and stuff like that. So I think because there were so many positives from my situation, he was very positive about it as well, because he knew that he knew it could be really serious, but it wasn't as serious as some other cases would be. So it was really helpful to be around him when he was in a positive state of mind. That made me feel in that way as well. But then in terms of my friends, so I stayed in Norwich and they went off to uni, to different unis. And so at the time of the diagnosis, they were at their uni, so quite far away from me. So it was quite hard to sort of gauge their reaction. But one of my best friends called me and said, you know, I'm here if you need to talk. You know, I realise it's really difficult and I'm sorry I can't be there to sort of help you. But she said, how are you feeling? And I said, oh, I'm feeling quite positive about it. There's, you know, I'm not feeling really positive about it, but there's positives to focus on. And she sort of, you know, supported me with that and sort of reinforced those ideas. So that was nice. But yeah, as I said, because it was sort of over the phone and over text, you can't really gauge what people are thinking or what their reactions are.
It's really limited your support network then, but you've still had that network in place just remotely.
Yeah, it's not, you know, I think it's good that we've got video call and calls and stuff. So I've had some contact with like the support network, but definitely not having the sort of close contact where you can hug someone has been very weird and not really what you'd expect when you have a cancer diagnosis. It's not like you'd expect to go in there with a loved one, have that support from everyone when you come home, in terms of them being there. But that was sort of all stripped away because of COVID. So it is really hard to sort of comprehend in a way, because it's not what you expect when you're given that sort of difficult news.
Do you feel as though your friends and peers are having a different experience with uni than you are at the moment? Or do you think because of coronavirus, you don't feel as left out, because you're kind of all in the same boat in that sense of like everyone's like in lockdown and stuff like that?
So I've had a very different experience to what my friends have had. So one of my friends went in 2019, so my other friend and I took a gap year and went travelling, and then the other friend went to uni in 2019, so had that first year uni experience. So made her network of friends, made that sort of, you know, she has a house where she lives with her friends. And then my other friend who I went travelling with went last year, and she stayed in halls of residence and had like the best flat, like in terms of friends, and got on with her friends, the flat, really well. And she just clicked with all of them. Whereas when I moved into halls, no one was really very sociable. We didn't really do anything, and we didn't do like social events in sort of the kitchen drinking or, you know, playing games or anything like that. And I didn't really click with any of them. So I was only there for a month and then I just came straight home, because it was so isolating and it was so lonely that I didn't really want to experience that. So it's quite hard to sort of accept. You know, I know my friends are having a really good time at uni because they've got really good friends around them, They're still having, you know, they're still partying quite a lot, not in the terms when you're not allowed to, not like a big party, but party with their flat. So it is quite hard to accept that, because mine's been very different experience. It's a very different experience. And also I think with the diagnosis as well, it's made it quite hard to have that normal sort of life that you have as a teenager, or sort of, you know, growing into an adult. I haven't had the experiences that I'd expected. I haven't made loads of friends. I haven't been able to get that independence, really. And also because I realised when I got the diagnosis that it could make me more vulnerable to COVID. That made me so much more like nervous about being around people. So like, I've met up with my friends recently in my garden, and they're so sort of comfortable with being close to each other, and I'm just sitting in the background being like, stay away from me, please. I don't want to go near you because it makes me nervous. So it does make me feel quite alien in a way, but I think that is, a lot of people have experienced that, you know, having to shield. It's really weird to sort of know that, you know, as things open up, people are going to be meeting their friends, going to the pub, having fun. But in my situation, and in a lot of other people's situations, we can't do that. Well, I can't do that, and a lot of other people can't do that. So it feels weird to not, as a teenager as well, to not be able to have that normal life that I'd expected.
Which one do you think's had the most effect? Do you think it is the COVID side of things, or is it the cancer itself?
I think COVID has, in a wider sort of sense, because I only got the diagnosis in January. So before then, I was sort of acting as sort of, you know, I wasn't seeing myself as a vulnerable person. So I was sort of being, you know, I was nervous for my family, but I think as young people sort of think they're quite invincible, and they're not, you know, they're going to be okay if they get COVID and things like that. And I think in terms of uni as well, if it wasn't for COVID, you know, I'd be able to make loads of friends who weren't in my flat. You know, I was put with the people in my flat, but I'd be able to choose more friends if COVID didn't happen. So I think COVID in a way has had more of an effect, but over the last couple of months, the cancer has, because it's made me feel more nervous about COVID for myself.
So it's the COVID that's had the more effect, but it's then the cancer that has amplified that, so it's more more prevalent to you. And
yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
And just before that, you mentioned going travelling, you did. I just kind of wanted to know, like, because I think you was travelling when the lockdown, like the first one, was just meant to be happening, wasn't it? What was that sort of experience like for you then? Because that was like pre-diagnosis, that was kind of almost pre-COVID in a way. So what
it was very weird. I left on the 8th of March, I think it was, and I left a UK that I recognised, and a life that I recognised and had known for my whole life. And I think at that time the government hadn't said anything about lockdown or what they'd be doing to sort of deal with COVID. And I think people were in a little bit of denial that it was getting worse in the UK, including myself. So when I left, I was quite okay with going to Thailand, because I thought it'd be fine and I'd have a month there and I'll be getting back and it'll be okay. My trip in Thailand only lasted a week and a half, because I was doing like a tour. I was with a tour group, and halfway through we were trekking, and halfway through that, we were told that the rest of the trip would be cancelled because loads of borders were closing, and COVID was getting worse in many places. So it was a big panic to get back and try and find a new flight that that would get us back in time before the UK borders closed. So it did take a while, and it was very stressful to get back. And all the tickets were really expensive, like over £1,000 to just have a return back to the UK. So it was very stressful, and it was really strange because Thailand was really quite chill with everything. It didn't seem to be a problem there. Like, COVID wasn't really mentioned. It wasn't a thing really when we were there. So it was very easy to not think about what was going on in the UK because we were in that environment where it wasn't scary. And we were planning, when we were told it was cancelled, we were planning to still continue the trip. And we were like, oh, we can get back in time, it'll be fine, we'll do a little bit more and then go back. But then my best friend and I both got calls from our mums, and they were literally in tears, being like, you have to come home, the borders are shutting, you're going to get stuck, we're really nervous for you. And that was sort of the warning sign for both of us that we needed to get back, and it was getting a lot worse. And then we came back, and it was such a weird experience, because literally it was like, I think it was like 3 days later we went into lockdown, and everyone was panicking, but also we hadn't had that lead up to it where we were sort of prepared for it, so we were sort of like thrown in the deep end really. And it was really weird to come back to a world that I didn't really recognise or
Did you sort of feel the difference as soon as you got off the plane in the UK then? Was there that?
Yeah, I mean, even in the airport in Thailand, when we got the flight back, the airport was absolutely rammed with people, like, trying to get flights. They were all in masks. There were people in, like, full, like plastic ponchos and masks and hats and, like caps to keep COVID off, I assume COVID off the head, maybe. Yeah, it was rammed there. So that was sort of the start of, oh my God, it's actually happening. Like, this is really weird. But then when we got on the plane, it was completely empty. So that was even stranger. It was literally a plane to ourselves. And then when we got back to the airport in London, that was completely empty for some reason. And the roads were completely empty, and yeah, it wasn't the London or the airports that I had left to go to Thailand to. It was completely like a new sort of alien world.
When you was in the airport there, as you mentioned, people had masks on, which like a year ago none of us were used to. So that part must have been a scary experience as well, I guess.
It wasn't normalised. It was so weird to see, like, everyone in masks, because, like, that wasn't a normal thing to do, and it wasn't, like, you weren't expected to wear masks like you are now, wherever you, well, if you go inside, you're expected to wear a mask, but at that point, we were like, what even is a mask? Why do we need to wear a mask? What is this? So it was really strange, yeah.
And so was you planning to travel for, like, a year's, like, from a gap year sort of thing?
Yeah, we did 2 weeks interrailing before Thailand, and then we were going to do a month in Thailand and then hopefully do some more travelling in the summer. So compared to a lot of our friends who were sort of working up until April to then go travelling from April in the summer, they didn't get to go travelling because of COVID and lockdown. So we were very lucky to get the 2 weeks in Europe and then a week and a half in Thailand to actually have a bit of experience of travelling. So that was good. I was very happy about that. But yeah, the year was planned to travel in and get experience, which we didn't get loads of.
And how did your year actually go once you did come back to the UK? Were you working at all? Could you work or study?
Yeah, so I basically didn't do anything for like March, April, May, June, July. But I already had a job before I left to go to Thailand. I was a waitress. So they actually put me on furlough for like the whole of lockdown, which I was really, really lucky for, which was amazing. And then they asked me to come back in August when restaurants were opening again. So I worked in August and September. And then I started uni in at the end of September. So so I had that sort of distraction from other things as well, which was nice. It was something new to do that I could enjoy that I hadn't had over lockdown. I'd basically just been driving myself mad doing, I don't even know what I was doing, just watching television and reading books. It was very boring, but everyone experienced that. So, yeah.
And did you finish that job when you started uni, or have you still been in that?
No, I've still, I'm actually still furloughed at the moment with that. So also very lucky to still have a job there, which is amazing.
And how do you feel about returning to work with your diagnosis now?
So I'm a little bit more nervous about it than I was when I first went back. I was nervous when I went back first, but in a different sense now. I mean, I'm very lucky because I've had my first vaccine, which is great. But I think when I go back, I won't have had my second one, which makes me a little bit nervous in terms of the diagnosis. But also, I would have had all my treatment by then. So hopefully I won't actually have any cancer left in my body by the time I go back, or any cancer cells or anything like that. So I'm sort of nervous in a way, but I also know that I don't need to be, because I'm not in a situation that I was like at the start of the year when I first got the diagnosis and was a little bit more vulnerable. So yeah, it's sort of mixed emotions about that, really.
And have you felt like this diagnosis has kind of changed your life in a sense since January then, or do you still feel like you're just kind of living in this like sort of COVID period and it's still similar?
I mean, I think it has changed quite a lot. Like, I don't really know how it's changed, but it's sort of, I think, as I said, it's made me more nervous about COVID and being able to see people and do stuff. But also, it's sort of, I don't know, in a way, like having sort of I had the operation at the beginning of February, and recovered within sort of 2 weeks, which was great. But it was sort of, I don't know, that sort of limited me in quite a way. So in terms of like doing stuff, doing exercise and things that I would be doing before, it was quite hard to do that. So I found that quite difficult to not be able to exercise. That was sort of integrated into my day as a thing to do during lockdown. So that was quite difficult to sort of accept. And also I think knowing that like the next couple of months would be a little bit difficult, so recovering from the operation and then having the radioactive treatment, is quite sort of not a long process, but like involves quite a lot of different things, and then I'd have to stay at home for a bit and I can't like go to the pub because I'd be radioactive for a little bit. So it sort of changed my life in terms of limiting me for certain things, which you'd expect, I guess, with every sort of cancer. So yeah, but then also I'm still just living a life that's in lockdown like everyone else. So yeah, it's a mix of both, really.
Yeah. And so how would you say exactly the process of going through treatment specifically during this period has affected you?
So when I had my first operation, which was in December, it was the 21st December, so 4 days before Christmas. So it was quite like it's quite annoying timing, because I knew that it wouldn't mean that I could enjoy my Christmas as much as I usually would. And also I had to self-isolate for 3 days, which is a thing that they do at the hospital when you have to go in for stuff. I had to take time off work, which was quite hard because that was like their busiest time in Christmas time. But also I think it was the right thing because obviously COVID cases were rising, so it was a bit more dangerous to be working. And then, yeah, I had my second operation in February, had to isolate for 3 days. which is quite hard when you can't do much inside. When you're inside a lot of the time anyway, it's nice to get out and go for walks, but obviously I couldn't do that at the time, which was annoying. And then also staying inside to actually recover from the operations took a while. So again, I couldn't really go outside. And then with the radioactive treatment...
Just to clarify, you mean radioiodine therapy, not radiotherapy?
Yeah, so I actually have to isolate. I'm isolating from today, from yesterday, for 5 days, and then I have to go in for an injection on Sunday, and then an injection on Monday, and then into hospital Tuesday for the actual treatment. And then I have to go back on the Friday to have a full body scan. So it's very much like, it affected my life in terms of there's a lot of trips to hospital, which is expected, but it's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, especially next week. With the radioactivity as well, it means I have to stay away from being close to my family when I come back for a bit, and then also stay away from people when I go outside for a while as well. So I guess it's like COVID, it's sort of like COVID situation anyway, because you're social distancing and things like that. But from social distancing from people inside your house, it's a bit weird. But yeah, I think I'm very lucky with it not affecting me as significantly as some other people experience with cancer. But it has affected me quite a bit. So yeah.
And has this had quite a bit of an impact on your uni studies, for example? Like how have the university sort of dealt with your sort of on and off and balancing the treatment? Yeah.
So, what was I going to say? So when I was first like getting all the ultrasounds and blood tests and trying to call people and get appointments and things, it meant that I was very distracted from my uni work, so I couldn't concentrate very well, which was annoying because it was like my first couple of months where I was enjoying it, but I couldn't enjoy it much because I was worried about, you know, what results might be. I was worried about no one contacting me and me not finding out information. It was a very long process that was quite stressful, trying to push people to do things and give me news that I needed. So it did affect my studies in terms of me concentrating. But then with my first operation, that was in the Christmas holidays, so I didn't really have any work to do, which was great, because it meant that I wasn't missing out on that. And then my second operation, that was during uni term. It was like the week that we went back, I had the operation, so I had to email them and say, like, I'm going to need some time to sort of, I'll have to miss some lectures because I won't be able to make them because I'll need to rest. And also I had an assignment that was due, but I was able to get an extension on that. And the uni were actually really good. They were really understanding. They were like, just make sure like you come back when you need to. Like, we don't expect you to come back when we expect you to come back. We expect you to come back when you want to, which was really great. And it was nice to have that was an extra sort of support network that was nice. And they were checking up on me. My advisor was checking up on me loads, which was really nice, to have that sort of, like I said, yeah, support and someone else to sort of talk to and be there when I sort of needed him to be, which was really nice as well. So yeah, it's been quite a positive experience with uni in terms of dealing with the situation, but I've also been quite lucky with how my operations have fallen and my treatment next week. I haven't got uni next week, so that's not interfering with that, which is great. So yeah, it's not been too bad.
And I was just thinking then, how would you say that in terms of your mental health during this period, is that kind of how you came to find Big C in the first place? Like, how exactly did that come about? Your sort of like, did you get like sort of the hospital mention Big C, or?
So when I first got the diagnosis, I got given a Macmillan card with a nurse to call, But I also was told that I'd be referred to the Big C. So yeah, that was basically how I was referred. And then I'm trying to remember what happened because it feels like ages ago. I was contacted, I think it was through my support nurse, Holly, who actually told me about the support groups that the Big C run, the free to be sessions. So I went to the first one of that and I really enjoyed it. I've been going sort of since then. And it's just sort of nice to have that support group that we don't really talk about cancer, and that's great and I enjoy that. But it's sort of knowing that you have that sort of shared experience that and sort of shared understanding of what you're going through and what everyone else has gone through. It's sort of you know that underlying sort of support is there, even though we don't talk about it. And it's just nice to have that sort of social group that you can connect with and talk to. And then Holly told me about the Big C offer counselling, free counselling for 6 weeks or more if you need it, and asked if I wanted it, and I said yes, I definitely do. So I started that a couple of weeks ago. I've only had one session, but just having that one session, I mean, when she first asked me if I wanted it, I was a bit like, oh, I don't know if I need it, I feel like there's not much to talk about. And I had the first session and I came away from it having spoken for basically the whole session about things I hadn't thought of speaking about, or thought of being worries that are sort of in the back of my mind. So it's nice. It's also nice to have a new person to talk to who can offer solutions and support on top of the support that I already have. So yeah, that's really how I found the Big C and the help that I've got from them. But so far it's been really great, and I think without it would have been quite a lot more isolating than it has been, because I couldn't talk to anyone who, you know, had experienced similar things. I couldn't have that extra support of counselling. So yeah, it's been really, really brilliant, really.
Yeah, because you said you've been quite positive through everything, and I suppose then when you then sit and speak to someone who is a counsellor and then having that safe space to just go, okay, these are actually what's going on behind, that must have felt like a huge weight has then come off your shoulders, because you've been so positive for yourself and for everyone else, but there is still that negativity behind it as well, isn't there?
Exactly, and I can't, obviously, my family are there for me to talk to, but also I don't want to be a doom and gloom sort of person and change that positivity into negativity to them, because I know that's not going to be helpful for them. So yeah, as you said, it's nice to have another person who I'm not related to, I don't really know, but I can just vent to and have listened to me, really. That's the main important thing, really.
Yeah. And do you think, like, a lot of people might not go to counsellors and stuff like that because they think, kind of like yourself at the beginning, like, not sure whether they really needed it, because some people think that they have to be, like, utterly depressed to go to them or something, whereas really it is just that sort of outlet for them to just voice any concerns and even just to talk about little things that have happened throughout their day, I guess, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite lucky because, well, in a sense, I've had sort of counselling and therapy in the past, for different reasons, but I know how helpful it can be, and because I've had that past experience and because I was offered counselling, although I sort of thought, oh, I don't really have much to talk about, in the back of my head I was thinking, you know, there's going to be more that you can talk about, you know, there's going to be things that come up that you, if you didn't have counselling, you wouldn't actually deal with. So I think it's quite, but I think it's also quite hard for people who haven't had that experience of past sort of help through counselling to know, like, how beneficial it actually is, and how much you can get out from it when you don't think there's much you can get out from it, because it is literally just the person that you're speaking to, one, asking the right questions, but also to just listening to whatever you have to talk about. And it doesn't have to just be about the one thing that you've gone to speak to them about. It doesn't just have to be about cancer. It can be about what, like, the repercussions of that, or anything that's sort of come as a byproduct of that as well. So yeah, I think I definitely, well, I know I definitely recommend doing that if that's offered to you, especially as the Big C offer it for free. You know, usually it's very expensive to get counselling and therapy. You have to be very sort of privileged to get that that help, really, which is sad, but it's the way at the moment. So I think if you're offered that chance to have that counselling and support, then there's no reason why you shouldn't. You know, everything says that you should, basically. You can't, there's no argument against it, to be honest, for me anyway. And I think people will find that as well if they got counselling. So yeah, I definitely recommend it.
And as you mentioned, you'd already had like counselling for other things, but I assume you hadn't had a like support group before. You probably never went into one of those, is that right?
Yeah, no, I've never had that. I've always had one-to-ones with the counsellors or therapists, or just speaking to my family. So it is really nice to have that extra new experience and new set of people to talk to that I'd probably, you know, we're sort of thrown into that group where you don't know the people to start with, and you probably would never meet them in your life, or probably never get the chance to be friends with them necessarily. So it's really nice to have that chance to meet new people, and have a bit of fun, really, and distract yourself from what's going on in your daily life. It's a social event, and especially with COVID as well, you need social events to sort of keep you going, even if they're online. So yeah, I'm really glad that I've got that on top of the counselling as well.
Did you have any sort of concerns with going to the support groups, in the sense of like them being online? Did you think that it might have been harder to connect with people or anything like that?
Yeah, I think definitely. I was very nervous about starting it, because obviously, yeah, online it's quite hard to connect as much, or get to know people, because if there's a large group of you, it's hard to sort of always get your voice heard. But I didn't really find that in this group. Like, there's a lot because it's 2 hours long, you get a lot of time to, you know, say whatever you want to, or talk to people and connect. And even though it's online, it still works really well. I think also one of my main concerns was I didn't really feel like I had a valid reason to go to it, because I knew that there'd be people who were really, like, had really sort of, well, I knew that there'd possibly be people who were really struggling with cancer, or were at different stages in their treatment to me. And I felt like I hadn't had, like, an extreme sort of experience with cancer that made me valid enough to be in a support group for cancer patients. But then when I went, I realised that it wasn't about that. It wasn't about, you know, being valid or talking about your experiences. It was just knowing that you were with people who had been through similar things, and then just taking that time to socialise instead of just talking about your experiences, really, which is really nice, and not what I expected either.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who go to our support groups, they do feel the same thing, and it's a very common thing to feel like, oh god, because there is always someone worse off than you, but you are just as important, and, you know, it's been really, really valuable having you in the group, especially as someone who's at uni, for example. We've got other members of the group that are at uni as well, so you've got more in common with them, and being able to share, oh yeah, it's sort of a bit tough having to go to these appointments and do uni work, or not being able to go and see people and do all that. So being able to share that and just not feel alone about that is a real positive thing for other members of the group and for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's a two-way thing, isn't it? It helps you, but it also helps other people, and that's sort of the beauty of it, really. And it makes you feel good about doing that, because you know you're doing it for yourself, but also for other people, and to give them support as well. So yeah, I really enjoy it.
Yeah, we've also got some other members of the group that are obviously a little bit more unwell, but and so them they're because they get to know other people in the group like yourself, and they then hear the positives with you. They're not jealous of that. They're just happy that someone else is coming out in the positive side. So that's you're helping them by that, and just being there and being positive, which
Yeah,
you are amazing at doing.
As
Thank you,
somebody,
Flushing.
as someone who doesn't really who hasn't seen the support groups and doesn't know the in and out structure of it all and everything, how would both of you exactly describe the support groups?
Do you want to
I'll
go
let you go
first?
first. No, I'll let you go first to put you on the spot.
Oh, thanks. I guess so they happen every Wednesday, and it's either an afternoon session or an evening session. Different things happen in different sessions, but the first one I went to, what did we do in the first one? I think because it was a big group, we had a lot to sort of talk about what was going on in our lives, what was happening. But I think at the end of it, we sort of played online games, and that's really fun to do actually, with new people as well. It adds to that social experience. And then the session yesterday that I went to, we did exercise, like some gentle exercises, and spoke to another member of someone who works at the Big C, who does exercise classes and offers that. And that was actually, it wasn't what I expected, but I really enjoyed it, and it was nice to actually just sort of do sort of gentle exercises to move your body and do something different that you wouldn't really do in, like, if you're calling your friends or calling like family, you wouldn't be like, right, let's do some gentle exercises. So it was nice to sort of have that new experience, and yeah, it every session is different, and it's either you talk a lot about what's going on in your lives, and like situated, like things that are going on in the world, or you play games, or you do sessions where you do exercise, like I said. So yeah, I've only actually been to three sessions since I started, but everyone's been different and everyone's been really great. So yeah, that's my sort of experience and description of the group. But Lee probably has a bit more of an in-depth one.
Yeah, so I've been facilitating the group for 5 years now, and the difference now between what we were when we were seeing people face to face and being able to do we were doing a lot. We do a lot of activities. So we've been Laser Quest. We've done days out to different places. We've been Harry Potter World and things like that. We've done chocolate workshops. You know, a lot of fun things. But then we also have people come in and do talks. So, like, sort of sexual health, life coaches we've had in to sort of do sort of individual bits with people. We do board games and pizza nights and things, and it's just about having time with with like-minded people and sort of knowing as well that if you're having a bit of a rough time and you want to talk about things, it's a real safe environment to talk about that. And we've tried to keep that with the online sessions as well, so we still do, like you said, we've done some online games and doing exercise. We're hoping to do some relaxation stuff as well, and yeah, we've done some craft sessions as well before Christmas. Yeah, and just a real safe environment to do them, do something a bit different, but also be able to talk about what's going on. You know, that, like I said, the difference between now and what we were before is huge, but at the same time, there's been some real positives in the online sessions. There was a young lady we were supporting that actually went through her end of life treatment, and we managed to support her at home, which is something we wouldn't have been able to do previously. But she, you know, from a hospital bed in a lounge, being able to talk to us and see the group that she'd known for over a year and been seeing face to face. And you know, because we wouldn't have normally been able to see her, but we were. We got to see her in a lounge, and she was really happy to see us and have be able to still talk about what was going on with herself and see what's going on with everyone else. Yeah, so it's just a real safe space to be a cancer patient and be yourself and talk about things and do different things. And I'm going to pick on you again, Evie, because you told me something the other day about after when we were talking about exercise, about what you've been doing to exercise during this time, and I really liked it, and I really want to get other people to, and I actually want to organise it now to do with the group.
Do you mean what I do for exercise? Do you mean?
Yes, your new exercise.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I've been doing basically just dancing recently. There's a professional dancer who does YouTube, and she goes through all the different types of dances that you'd see on like Strictly and dance programs, and teaches you them step by step, really slowly, but also. It's a really good workout, but it's a workout that you really enjoy, because I find that when I do just sort of, you know, gym workouts, it's really, like, I really find it hard to motivate myself, and it only feels good after I've done it, whereas this feels amazing when you're doing it and amazing when you've done it. So I found that really helpful, and it really lifts your mood as well, because you're dancing to songs, and I love dancing and I love music, so... It's sort of a recipe for happiness, really. I think it's a great way to lift your mood, but also get some exercise done. And also, she offers so many different ones. It's not like they're not always fast; they're sort of slow paced. So you've sort of got a choice of whatever dance you do. So, yeah, I think that'd be a really great thing to do in the group. Actually, I think people enjoy that.
Yeah, you might have to lead some of it though, since you're the expert now.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm an expert, but I could try.
I'm going to volunteer you as an expert.
Thanks.
So do you feel as though within the support groups you've been able to make some like real connections with other people then that you think you could take away from this?
Yeah, definitely. I think every different person is different and has had different experiences and are at different points in their lives. You know, we have some people who have been in it, and I think they've actually come out of recovery and their treatment. So it's nice to sort of speak to them as well, because they've had the experience, but they've come out the other side, which is really nice to see. But also, you know, there's people, because we're all young and have been diagnosed at a young age, it's nice to connect. That's a way of connecting to people, because you know you're not in a group with people who are older, who maybe haven't had similar experiences to you, or haven't missed out on the similar things to you because you've got diagnosed at a young age, which is, you know, you don't think of that happening at a young age, so it's nice to know that there's other people going through that with you. And yeah, we've got a group chat, which is nice. So when we're not doing the calls, we can message on there if we want. If someone wants to call to just chat to someone, then they can message and we can answer. There's not one person that I don't enjoy talking to, which is really nice. And there's not one person that I don't, you know, click with or get along with. So it's really nice to go into that environment and know that you're going to enjoy yourself and speak to people that you enjoy speaking to, really.
And what sort of advice would you give to others going through the same sort of experience as you now and who haven't yet kind of gone through the support groups and counselling?
I think for people who maybe... are in the sort of stages of maybe getting diagnosed or maybe have symptoms and are worried about them, my first advice would be get to the doctors, because my experience with this situation has been, I think it was mostly just my doctor's surgery, and it was a university one, so it wasn't, you know, the sort of same as... It's not a bad doctor surgery, but I think because they deal with young people, they're not as concerned as they would be at normal GPs. So I found that the doctors were they downplayed what was going on a lot, and they told me not to worry, and it was nothing, and very slow with things. But I find that I know when there's something wrong with myself, like I know when I need to push for something. And I'd say if you do have symptoms of whatever it is and you're worried about it, 100% even if 100%, even if you go to the doctors and they say, oh, don't worry about it, but you still think there is something wrong, push for it because you need to, if no one else is going to. And I think if I didn't push for certain things, I wouldn't be in the situation that I am now, and I wouldn't be in such a positive situation from the start. So that would be my first advice for people who maybe haven't been diagnosed or have symptoms of a cancer or something like that. I guess my other advice for people who haven't had counselling or been to a support group but are going through treatment or diagnosis and things like that, 100% do both of them, because I think, you know, they're both brilliant by themselves, but I think together they make sort of the dream team, and they're definitely what you need to get through your diagnosis and to just build your support network. Because I know for a lot of people, you have friends and family, but you have an extent to which you can speak to them about certain things and also feel that they're okay with you speaking to them about them without worrying them, I guess. So having the support group and having the counselling is a brilliant way to not worry about what the other people think, and to have that an extra support network, which I think everyone needs, and everyone needs regardless of their situation. Just being able to talk to people is a really great thing, especially during COVID as well, and getting diagnosed with cancer during COVID is even more lonely than it would be in normal circumstances. So having that support group and having that the counselling is just a great way to not feel isolated and feel like you can talk to someone and they will listen to you without just putting you aside and saying, oh, don't worry about it, like I'd experienced before. It's really nice to know that that person cares, and those people care about what you're saying, and care about your experiences. So if you're offered it, 100% do it, because there's no reason why you shouldn't, is my main advice for young people and people going through similar experiences. So yeah.
Just to pick up on what you said in the first bit about struggling with doctors, I think that is a very common thing for especially young people who, you know, even GPs sort of go, well, you're too young for that. Did you end up getting a second opinion, or was it just a...
So what happened was, so I went to the doctors and he said, oh, don't worry about it. But he still put me through for an ultrasound just because he was like, oh, I'll do it because you might need one. And then I was told that I'd be able to get the results from my doctor's surgery. So I called my doctor and he said he couldn't access the results from the biopsy that I had with the ultrasound, and then I called the hospital and said, oh, I can't get them, can I get them from you? And they said, no, it's from the doctors. So I went back to the doctor's surgery and I called again, and another doctor answered and said that they could get the results but couldn't understand them. So by that point I was just like, I don't like the surgery anymore. The doctors aren't being helpful, they're not doing what I want. So I went back, because obviously I'm still in the same place that I was before, I just went back to my old surgery, and they were so much more helpful and supportive there. So I didn't really need a second opinion in that sense, because I just moved back to the surgery and they were really helpful. But I still needed to push for things, especially with COVID as well. I felt like I was being a nuisance a lot, and I knew that the hospital and doctors were struggling with COVID, so dealing with COVID patients and things like that. So I felt really bad about pushing, but my family and my friends were like telling me I needed to, because otherwise nothing would get done. And I think also, like you said, Lee, being young, you know, people brush you aside quite a lot if it's unlikely that you'll have something. But there's unlikely and then there's impossible, and usually there's never an impossibility. And I think what I found is, my cancer is, you've got a 1 in 10 chance of getting that cancer. So it's quite a it's very sort of low chance that if you have a lump on your neck, it's going to be cancerous. But obviously in my case it was, so I've learned from that that yes, there are things that tell you, you know, oh, it's very unlikely and the chances of it happening are really low, but not to let that sort of cloud your judgment in what's happening. I think if a doctor just tells you, oh, don't worry about it, it's really unlikely, don't just take that, you know, if you're not genuinely worried about it, then that's your decision. But if you are worried about it and they say that to you, don't just take that sort of lightly. I think you've got to push for things if you feel worried about it, and you will get somewhere in the end and that will benefit you in the end. It's just getting there really, and pushing for it to start with. But yeah, I think that's the main thing that you need to do in this situation is go with your gut feeling and don't just go off percentages of the chances of you having something or the likelihood of it, because it's not always, you know, the case, because there are people who are in that percentage, and if that is you, then you need to push for things to get it sorted and help yourself basically. So yeah,
one of the things you said there as well actually is that you weren't going to, but you did because friends and family, and you know, if you're concerned about someone, then definitely do push it, because you know, you're a case in point that does make a huge difference on that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if my family hadn't told me to push for it, I'm a very polite person sometimes, and I get nervous about what people are going to think. And I was very much of the sort of, oh, I don't really want to annoy someone, I don't want to pester someone. But my boyfriend and my parents are very much like, you just push for it, because you're not going to get anywhere if you don't. And you know, I think, as I said, that really helped my situation, and it would have been a lot longer if I hadn't pushed for things. It would have been a lot longer situation and a lot longer experience with it, really. Sort of getting results and getting the right people to contact was very difficult, because you had to keep pushing and finding the right people. But you will get there in the end. And I think, yeah, as you said, if you are friends and family of people who maybe have symptoms or have a lump or something like that, you need to push them to do something, because they might not do it without that extra sort of pressure. Well, not pressure, but push from family to do it.
That supporting push in the right direction.
Exactly.
Do you both feel that, like, a lot of young people don't kind of push it that much because, like you kind of mentioned, like, they don't have that sort of experience, like, maybe, like, your parents did, where, like, they've got more experience where they've had to push doctors for other things that have happened in their life, so...
Yeah, I think as a young person, you haven't had those experiences where you've necessarily had something serious happen and doctors have sort of brushed it off. So because you haven't had that experience, you're more likely to not worry about things. And as I said earlier, I think everyone experiences it when they're young. You feel invincible. You feel like nothing can touch you. You feel like, you know, the chances of you getting cancer or getting serious problems are really low. So, you know, pushing for things and going to the doctors, it's become sort of... I know a lot of people who just wouldn't bother, who'd be like, oh, I'll be fine, it'll go away soon. So I think having that family, those family and friends to push you who have had those experiences and know that doctors aren't always going to tell you the right answer or always going to be right, which is, you know, a human thing, it's not their fault, but it is sometimes the situation. It really helps to make you realise that anything can happen. It doesn't matter if you're young, it doesn't matter if you're old, you know, anything can happen. You shouldn't rule anything out, basically. So yeah, I think that was the main brilliant thing that I had the family and friends who pushed me and helped me through pushing me to get things done, and that really put me in a better situation than I could have been in.
Yeah, from my point of view, I've worked with, over the years, quite a few younger people that have had cancer diagnosis, and there's, I could say there's quite a high percentage of them that have told me that they went to their doctor and the doctor said, oh, it's, you know, it's probably nothing, here, have some painkillers, or, you know, or sort of almost fobbed them off, and it wasn't, and they could go back, you know, and they knew there was something not right, and they went back a couple more times, and it wasn't until they saw a different doctor who sort of looked at it from a different perspective and said, okay, well, why don't we go down this route and have a look at this, and then they got their diagnosis. And it's a story that happens too often, but because then people pushing things and saying, no, that isn't right, and don't be afraid to ask for a second opinion. Don't be afraid to say, I want to see a different doctor and ask them, because, you know, all it takes sometimes is a different perspective from someone who's experienced it. Even a doctor that's experienced it with another young person might think, actually, I'm going to look into this, and it does happen, and it's unfortunate, and I do understand why they sometimes sort of push it on, because there's, you know, young people. There's a lot of young people that go and they have just got a bad back, or they have just got this or that. It's, you know, but at the same time, you know, like yourself, it was just needed to be taken seriously, and it's, yeah, you know, being, because it's been sorted out soon enough, hopefully you should make a full recovery and do really well because of it.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way you described it as well earlier, Evie, where you said young people just feel invincible, as if, like, that nothing will touch them, and, like, that is the real point, that, like, what both of you have said about trying to get young people to actually just keep going back, and so they do, because it is that sort of thing, I guess, where if you know there's something wrong with you, like, even if it wasn't cancer or anything, like, if you know there's something wrong, it's most likely, like, you know your own bodies, don't you?
Exactly, yeah. And no one else is going to know what you're going through in terms of your body. So you are the only one that can really know if there's something wrong, and know if you need to do something about it. So you should listen to that voice in your head.
I just had a couple of questions that sort of came up from other points made, really. So I just wanted to ask you, Evie, you mentioned that, obviously, that your cancer is in your thyroid, and that can obviously affect a lot of different things in your body. And, you know, yours was presented with a lump, but you didn't actually have anything else too different, you said. So since you've had your operations and stuff, have you noticed any differences that you perhaps hadn't noticed before, that since sort of changes since then?
Yeah, so looking back on before I found the lump, thinking the only others, because I didn't think I had symptoms to start with apart from the lump, the only thing I look back on and think, actually, that really makes sense, was I was really, really emotional. Like, my emotions were completely over the place. I had a massive emotional sort of breakdown, and then, like, a week later found the lump. So I sort of connect that to that, but apart from that, I didn't have any other symptoms. What was I saying? Having had the operations, because they took they took half of the thyroid out with the lump, and then the other half of the thyroid out on the second operation, it really, like, not having a thyroid affects a lot of things, as I said. Because obviously you have thyroxine, which is a tablet to replace the thyroid hormones. But when I first had it, after having my second operation, I noticed that I got very, very tense and very, very stressed very, very quickly. I got really emotional again. What else did I have? I got really anxious. I lost weight quite quickly as well, which is related to thyroid and its function. You can either put on a lot of weight if it's functioning too, I'm not sure if I'm going to get this right. So if it's functioning too high, it can make you put on weight, I think. And if it's functioning too low, it can make you lose weight. That might be the other way around. But anyway, so I noticed those symptoms. I said that I needed to go on a lower dose, basically, because
because I thought it was too high because I was getting too many symptoms that I didn't want and weren't helpful, and I could connect to not having a thyroid and that affecting my body. So I think, yeah, if you notice any of those symptoms, you know, if your metabolism is really high and you're losing weight quickly, or you're putting on weight really quickly, or you get really stressed or really anxious or really emotional really quickly, that can be related to your thyroid. So that is, yeah, I think that's, I've noticed that after it, but it's been sorted now through changing the amount. So yeah,
it was lovely speaking to you both.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.